Hello, and welcome to the 1001 Albums Journey podcast. On today's episode, we're going to take a look at Duke Ellington and his 1956 live album, Ellington at Newport. So, let's get into it. So, who was Duke Ellington? Born Edward Kenny Ellington in 1899, the Duke was an American jazz pianist, composer, and leader of his eponymous jazz orchestra from 1923 through the rest of his life. He was born and raised in Washington, D.C., but Ellington was mostly based in New York from the mid-1920s and gained a national profile through his orchestra's appearance at the Cotton Club in Harlem. He was described as a master at writing miniatures for the 3-minute, 78 RPM recording format. Ellington wrote or collaborated on more than 1,000 compositions. And sadly, Ellington died on May 24th, 1974, due to complications from lung cancer a few weeks after his 75th birthday. So we're here to talk about Ellington at Newport, which is a 1956 live jazz album by Duke Ellington and his band. And the live performance was at the Newport Jazz Festival, a performance which revitalized Ellington's flagging career. Jazz promoter George Vine describes the 1956 concert as the greatest performance of Ellington's career and goes on to say it stood for everything that jazz had been and could be. It is, of course, included in the 1001 Albums to Hear Before You Die book, and the book ranks it one of the most famous albums in jazz history. The original release was partly recreated in the studio after Ellington's orchestra's festival appearance. A little bit more on that later. In 2022, so fairly recently, only last year, the album was selected by the Library of Congress for preservation in the United States National Recording Registry as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. So, a little bit about the man there. A big player in the jazz scene. It's interesting as well to note that it said there, taken from Wikipedia, that it revitalized Ellington's flagging career. Now that's a theme we've had a few times throughout the 1001 Albums podcast so far. Frank Sinatra, he was supposedly down and out when he released In the Wee Small Hours. Louis Prima as well, he was finding it difficult to find work. And isn't it a great thing that these artists, who were considered to be past their best or down and out, still went on to complete what is arguably their master recording of an album. So yeah, that seems to be a running theme so far. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about the book and what it's written about this album. After a spell in the doldrums, when swing bands went out of fashion, Duke Ellington's performance at the Newport Jazz Festival on July 7th, 1956, heralded a dramatic resurgence in his popularity. The irony is that the record, rushed out by Columbia to capitalise on the concert, was not really recorded at Newport at all. When informed that the concert recording was flawed, Columbia executives sent Ellington into a New York studio to re-record the set on the Monday after the gig. The resulting album is a patched together fusion of both live recordings, studio retakes, and canned applause. It became the biggest selling record of Duke's career. So that's what I wanted to talk about really, the re-recording of some segments of the album, which was supposed to be a live album from his live performance at the Newport Jazz Festival. Now, I can understand going into the studio and perhaps polishing a thing or two, making it sound a little bit better. But, and I blame Columbia for this, the record label. They were in such a rush to release the album off the back of what they assumed would be a successful live performance that they had Ellington and his orchestra re-record segments. And one of the best things about a live album, in my opinion, is the rawness of it. The ability to hear what that individual or band or artist, whatever you want to say, the ability to hear them in their performance. So truthfully, it doesn't sit too well with me that Ellington had to go re-record his performance in the studio and that some of it was used in this supposed live album. Let me continue with what else is written in the book. However, a brilliant 1999 reissue finally set the record straight. The original release is included, but thanks to a complicated piece of post-production work using the original masters and a long-lost radio recording, it also presents the actual concert in full and, at last, offers insight as to why the show was received so rapturously. The three-part Newport Jazz Festival suite, so new, says Ellington, we haven't even had the time to title it yet, offers some typically squealing trumpet work by Cat Anderson, but the concert's reputation, and that of the album, rests on the fizzing blues of diminuendo and crescendo in blue, specifically on tenor saxophonist Paul Gonsalves, and specifically on tenor saxophonist Paul Gonsalves's staggering reputation, making 27 chorus turn among the most famous solos in jazz history. So, 1999 CD reissue, which, just for clarity, I listened to the original 1956 LP version. In truth, it's good that they were able to preserve the original recording, enhance it, and release it to a new audience. Though, as mentioned, I think it's good that the fans of jazz and the fans of Ellington listen to the 1999 CD version and be able to hear what it was like to be there live and in person at that concert. But of course, they didn't have that sort of technology to be able to enhance the music on such a level. They could release it without needing to re-record. Still, for some reason, it doesn't sit right with me. They had Duke re-record his performance. I want to know what you think, though. Do you think it's fair that I'm being so critical? Or do you think of it as an essential part of business that the record label, Columbia, had to take advantage of an opportunity and put out a live version of the performance? Please get in touch. I want to know what you think. Before I get into some reviews from RateYourMusic.com for this album, I'm going to play you a little bit of one of my favourites, Blues to Be There. I'm going to start from about 4 minutes and 20 seconds, so here it is. I thought I'd read you some reviews for this album, and these are taken from RateYourMusic.com. The first review is by a user called James Hoare, who gave the album 4 stars out of 5. They start the review by saying, "It turns out I love jazz. Jazz relaxes me and interests me. That's all you want from a music genre. The warm soul that's emanating from this live performance is truly unbelievable. You can tell everyone is sitting in pure awe of Ellington's work. It's a brilliant piece of music." The next review, by a user called Trey K. Holmes, gave the album 4 stars out of 5. And their review starts Duke Ellington could indeed compose some beautiful music, Blues to Be There is next level. So the first two reviews I've read there, full of praise. This one, a little bit more critical, by a user called Ghetto Joe, only gave the album 2 stars out of 5. This really swings, but is completely ruined by the guy trying to hit the highest note possible on his sax. I think it's a sax. During 3 of the songs. If you listen to this in a house with other people, and no one comes in to ask you why you're listening to someone squealing, you're onto a good thing. I understand what Ghetto Joe is saying here. In my blog post that I'm about to read you once I've read these reviews, I also criticise the high squealing notes by Kat Anderson, who I believe was the trumpet player, not the saxophonist, but still, it is hugely annoying. So much so that I'm going to play you a little bit of it now, just so you know how annoying it truly is. So yeah, I've got to be honest, this album could really do without this high-pitched whine. Anyway, next review is by user Marty Delaney 3, and they gave the album 4.5 stars out of 5. The entire album will knock your socks off. Incredible instrumentation and possibly the best live performance I've ever heard. It redefined my appreciation for jazz music. When an album is praised as much as this one is, and I don't want to knock the music, because it's obviously still very good musically, apart from the high-pitched squealing, of course, and it's interesting to see people hold this album up and put it on a pedestal, and quoted there by Marty Delaney, possibly the best live performance I've ever heard. But we've already discussed the live issues about this album, and how it was partly re-recorded, so knowing that it isn't 100% authentic, does that take away from the album a little bit? I think that's the most interesting thing about this album, to be honest. It's which side of the fence you sit on. The last user echoes what I've said just there quite nicely. The user Nice Bryce gave the album 3.5 stars out of 5, and said, "I liked it better when I thought it was real." Which I take to mean, if they believed it was a live album, they would have loved it. But upon learning that it wasn't all real, and part of it was re-recorded, they liked it a little bit less. It's always very interesting to know what you think as well. Music is so diverse that it can split opinions, and it is really interesting how multiple people can have different experiences by listening to the same piece of music. I would like to know what you think. Have I been overly critical on this album? Does it take away from the fact that it wasn't all live? You let me know. Just before I read you what I wrote for my blog post, I'm going to play you a little bit of the song Jeep's Blues. So here it is. So my blog post, which I wrote a few years ago now, started by saying I listened to the 1956 LP version of this album and not the 1999 CD re-release. This is not only the first ever Duke Ellington album I've listened to, but it is also the first ever full jazz album I've listened to performed by an orchestra with no singer. I have said before in previous blog posts that I'm not used to listening to music with no words or lyrics. Therefore, it was difficult for me to enjoy this album properly. I still enjoyed the music, but listening to songs without words was unfamiliar. This wasn't a bad album, so it's just different to what I'm used to hearing. That is the whole purpose of listening to all 1001 albums, to expand my knowledge of music. I'm still glad to have listened to it. The 1001 Albums book mentioned that this is one of the most famous albums in jazz history, so I am glad I can say I have listened to a prestigious jazz record from the 1950s that is considered one of the best jazz records ever. So this album was recorded on July 7th, 1956, and was a live album from Duke Ellington, recorded at the Newport Jazz Festival. However, only 40% of this album was taken from the live gig recording. Duke was called into the studio the Monday after the live gig by his label Columbia to re-record the songs. This album was patched together from live recordings, studio re-recordings, and canned audience applause. I was disappointed to read about this. I like live albums because it allows the listener to hear what it was like to be there. Live albums should sound raw and original. I don't like to think of these recordings touched up in the studio afterwards, let alone practically re-recorded. My favourite song from the album was probably Jeep's Blues, which sounded smooth and warm. I also enjoyed the second half of Blues to Be There. It was challenging to select precise parts because it all sounded similar. I did enjoy the build-up of atmosphere from the crowd in the song Minuendo and Crescendo in Blue. But, as I mentioned above, some of the applause was canned and added in later at the studio. So was this build-up in atmosphere legit, or was it added later? It's challenging to know. There was a few high squealing moments from the trumpet player William Cat Anderson, which was so high-pitched it became annoying. Anderson's Wikipedia page says he was well known for playing super high notes. It sounds like fingernails down a chalkboard. It gets super irritating. So, the 1001 Albums book says this is one of the most famous albums in jazz history. I need to be more clued up on jazz to know for sure, and I need to learn more about jazz to compare it to any other jazz record. But if you are a big jazz fan, you'll love this album. I, however, am a bit indifferent about it. My favourite songs from this album are Blues to Be There, particularly the second half of the song from 4 minutes and 20 seconds onwards, and of course the other song, Cheap's Blues. I gave the album a score of 5 out of 10, which equates to about 2.5 stars. Had I heard of this artist before? Yes. Have I listened to this album before? No. Would I listen to this album again? No. However, I did for an episode of a podcast I released, which of course is this episode. Am I interested in checking out other albums from this artist? No. And finally, does it deserve its place in the 1001 Albums book? If you are a big jazz fan, then yes. If you are not a big jazz fan, like me, then no. There's also a couple of comments on my blog post that I'm going to read you now. This comment was left by a user called Milaguru, who has left several comments on my blog posts, for which I'm obviously very grateful. Their comment starts by saying, "Like you, it seems, I didn't exactly grow up listening to instrumental music. I did learn to appreciate it though, mostly through movies at first, but it's still not something I listen to a lot. Instrumental metal or classical music, for example, I'll listen to more easily. My appreciation really depends a lot on the timing. The first time I listened to this album, I wasn't too in the mood, and it flew way over my head. That said, before reading this post, I re-listened to it, and this time, I greatly enjoyed the whole thing, especially Festival Junction and Jeep's Blues. Though I'm now learning some of the live sounds were actually added or modified in studio, and some songs were re-recorded, and I get your disappointment, to my uninformed ears, it sounded live, and so it helped me paint a picture in my head. I think in some way, because I learnt to appreciate this kind of music through movies, the way I enjoy it now is by basically creating a movie in my head, to which the music becomes a soundtrack. And my appreciation depends in part on how available my mind is. The first time I listened, I was too pressed with time and my mind was on other things. This time, I could picture the busy tables and maybe a few people dancing and the band. So I really liked the experience. Like you said, live albums give the listener the opportunity to hear what it was like to be there. And that's what I got the second time. Despite it not being 100% live, and thankfully, my memory sucks, so I'll probably forget that by the time I listen to the album again in the future. But Similiguru raised some good points there. I think it's interesting to be able to have the imagination, almost sit back, close your eyes and listen to the music, and yeah, paint that picture in your head of what it would be like to be sitting in that room, to be there as the band and Duke Ellington are performing the music. Maybe I just need to work on my imagination a little bit more, but I could see how that would help you enjoy the music. Anyway, thanks for your comment, Miliguru. It's always very much appreciated. The next comment is by a user called Andrew B, another user that regularly comments on my blog posts. Thank you for getting in touch, Andrew. I'm coming at this from a different perspective. I was very familiar with Duke Ellington and owned several of his studio albums prior to listening to this. I played trombone in a college jazz band and have listened to a lot of jazz, though mostly from the 70s to the present. So I'm accustomed to jazz performances, solos, etc. I agree that the album starts off a little slow, but it picks up steam, and I was going nuts like the crowd in diminuendo and crescendo because the performance was blowing me away. I was listening to it at work and stood up at my desk and started going crazy with my headphones on. What's very interesting, and I have no problem admitting this, your opinion counts for a lot more being a jazz fan, but also knowing a lot more about jazz than me because of your experiences in a jazz band. So I appreciate your comment and where it's coming from. You're a lot more qualified than me to give a review, put it that way. So that roundabout wraps up this episode of the 1001 Album Journey podcast for Ellington at Newport. Just before I go, I want to remind you to get in touch. It's safe to say that this album divides opinion a little bit, maybe amongst jazz lovers, but particularly, I think anyway, between people who are against the idea of re-recording the album. So it's essential to see what you think. I want to hear your opinions about this album. Let me know what you think of it, your review and rating, and let me know what you think about the re-recorded parts. Am I being too harsh? Do you think some of the criticism is fair? Well, you let me know. Please get in touch. The next episode is going to be Old Blue Eyes again, Mr. Frank Sinatra, with his album Songs for Swingin' Lovers. But we'll get into that next time. In the meantime, if you want to leave a review for this podcast, that would be great. If you want to follow me for more news and keep up to date with everything that I'm doing, you can follow me at Albums Journey on Twitter. Once again, thank you for listening. Truly appreciate it. I'll catch you next time. Goodbye. Thank you.